Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Juwanza. Good morning. I hope everybody's having a great morning so far. It's a beautiful day, and just thankful to be alive to witness another day. We've got a very, very special morning show lined up for you. For those of you who were tuned in last Wednesday, my special guest was Hekshemsu Heru, Shekemeh Abneter, and we got another fabulous show lined up for you with my special guest. He is a priest and a chief with the Oseraset Society's DC Nome, and he's a counselor, he's a teacher, and a lecturer. And today we're going to be discussing Meneb, transcending emotions now, how to transcend your emotions now. There are a lot of times in life where we actually get caught up in our feelings, as they say. You know, we get caught up in our emotions, and if we're not careful, we'll allow these emotions to dictate and rule our lives, and in many cases, to a bad end. And so we're going to talk about today how to transcend those emotions, and there's going to be a workshop coming up in D.C. on Meneb, and talking about, again, how to transcend your emotions now. So let me get to my special guest, Hekshemsu Heru, Shekemeh Abneter. It's always a pleasure and honor to speak with you. I appreciate you coming on again. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Brother Juwanza, for having me back on.
My pleasure, sir. Again, we're going to be talking about the workshop that's coming up in Washington, and tell everybody how we can, you know, take advantage of that. That's going to be this weekend, and we're going to be sharing information about Meneb and, you know, how we can transcend our emotions. Again, as I stated at the top, that there are many instances where people get actually caught up in their emotions, and there's not a good outcome when it comes to that. So, but again, to lay the foundation for the discussion today, again, Meneb is a meditative system, and so I don't want to assume that people even know what meditation is. Everybody that's listening, I'm sure, has heard the term meditation, but actually what meditation is, please, if you don't mind, if you could share with us what meditation is, and we can lay the foundation for the discussion today.
Okay, well, again, thank you for having me on. And when we talk about meditation, if we look at the term itself, meditation, and part of the root of the word meditation is medi, or making reference to the middle. And that reference is taking into account that when, usually when people talk about meditation, they're talking about becoming very relaxed, becoming very intuitive, and those are aspects of meditation. But you got to look at your focus or your state of consciousness or how your energy resides on a daily basis to see what meditation really is. So during the course of the day, we have basically two states of operation. You have a state where you're awake. You have a state where you're asleep. And in the awakening state, you're very much mindful of your external surroundings. You're using your will to dictate your activity. You're perceiving and responding to things in the environment. And at the time that you're asleep, your will is basically dormant, meaning you're not initiating or dictating your actions or declaring how it is you're going to function. The operations that occur within you are basically taking place automatically independent of your will. So you don't have an external focus during the course of the sleep state. Well, when we're talking about meditation, we're talking about slowing our breathing down, because the breathing rate determines our level of concentration, our level of focus. And when you look at the level of focus being related to your brain activity and the various, excuse me, the various states of the brain activity, there's a state which we refer to as the alpha state when you're measuring your brain electrical activity and you're talking about the hertz. So it's between like 7 to 30 hertz per second, that alpha state, that when you slow your breathing down to that level, that gets you into a state whereby you become slowed down enough mentally in terms of your focus that you're still aware of your environment, and you can still use your will to dictate and indicate what it is that you want to focus on, what it is you want to take note of, but you're relaxed enough that you're receptive, that you can also contact into that part of your being whereby you're able to carry out or manifest an objective. So oftentimes when people talk about they're meditating and they want to heal themselves, they just want to chill out, they want to relax, all that's wonderful, but you want to look at meditation in terms of the process. You want to look at meditation also in terms of the practice, what it is that you can apply in a meditative state. So if I'm looking to change my behavior, then I just may declare, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to change this. I'm going to stop this, or I'm going to start something new. And we can be very sincere. We can be very committed. But we'll find that we say we will do certain things, but we're still not successful in doing it because the state of awareness or the state of consciousness that we're looking to make that change is not the proper state where change occurs. And then there's sometimes when we do things automatically and we say, well, I can't believe I did this. I don't understand how I did this or why I did this. I don't want to do that again. So it's like we fell asleep at the time that we were supposed to be making a decision or determination. We were really following an automatic response pattern. So with the meditation, you want to get in that in-between state of being awake and being asleep where you are awake enough or focused enough that you can determine what it is that your goal is, but you're asleep or relaxed enough that you can sow that seed into your being, into your spirit, that it can automatically take root. And as you continue to do the meditation with the visualization of seeing yourself accomplishing what it is you will to do, then it becomes an automatic pattern within your being. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about meditation, working with your breathing, slowing down your breathing to slow down your mental activity, to get to the state where you're alert and awake enough to use your will, that part of your being that's going to dictate and declare what your actions will be, but yet being relaxed enough to be open and receptive. Because if I'm trying to make a change or trying to establish a pattern when I'm very externalized, then I'm really not focused. It's just like you're trying to talk to someone and they're running around, they're on their phone, they're talking to other people, they're conducting business, they're on the internet, and you really want to get their full attention so that they can hear what you're saying, they can really receive what you're saying. So that's why we slow our breathing down to become less externalized, become more internalized. But we don't want to fall totally asleep where we're not able to, again, direct that thought that we want to have impressed upon our spirit, but you want to get relaxed enough that you're internalized and you are receptive, getting that middle state, and then sow that seed. So that's what we're talking about when we reference meditation.
You know, you referenced the will several times, and there are a lot of times when people who have the ability to make a declaration and, you know, exhibit what they consider stick-to-itiveness, they see the job through to the end, and that type of thing. And these people are considered to have strong willpower. But it's my understanding that the will really has no power, okay? So if you could actually break that down, because a lot of times people think that if they just exert, you know, their will, you know, we have what are called strong-willed people, then, you know, there are others who might not possess that same energy or energy configuration that will allow them to make a declaration and stick to it to the end, see it all the way through to the completion, whatever the declaration is. Could you talk about the will and what it is and its role in this discussion?
Yes. So talking about the will, we want to look at our whole being. And we see that there's two aspects to your being. There's your consciousness / will, that's one aspect. And consciousness is that aspect of your being that perceives, that sees. It's this aspect of your being through which you view what's occurring in life. And then you have the aspect of your being through which you carry out or you manifest, you express, you experience. And that's referred to as your spirit or the energy aspect of your being. So the consciousness part of your being really is devoid of energy. I know that may be a challenge to grasp that principle, but it's devoid of energy. So if consciousness is the means through which I see, then we're talking about the will being that aspect of consciousness whereby, or that aspect of your being related to consciousness whereby you're making a declaration that as you view, as you see, then now you're going to dictate and direct how it is that you're going to interact or involve yourself in a situation, or it's your means whereby you're going to direct, you're going to dictate what it is that you're going to bring into manifestation. The means to bring into manifestation the execution of your will is through the energy slash matter aspect of your being, or the spirit part of your being. And that is the aspect whereby you're able to have experience and have the storage of information, and you have interaction and sensory experiences itself. So the benefit of knowing this is that a lot of times we find ourselves getting caught up in our emotions, meaning that we're pursuing something or we're doing something based upon how we like it, how we feel about it, how it stimulates our senses. And we may realize even before we get involved with it that this is not something we should be doing, but yet it seems as though our ability to transcend that influence or transcend that urge is not there. Or we may not even be aware that we have the freedom to choose to deny that influence or to transcend that influence. And that becomes a problem because now we go about living our life in such a way that we're very much oftentimes following our feeling sensations and emotions. And that can lead to problems because the feeling sensations and emotions may take us to certain points and certain experiences where we shouldn't be, don't want to be, have negative effects that now have consequences and we have to pay for, quote unquote. So the will is that part of your being that is free of the influence of feeling sensations and emotions, meaning that you are always, always able to direct and dictate how you're going to respond in any given situation. You're always able to direct and dictate the energies you're going to bring to the situation, because if I'm free of the energy, then I'm free of the emotional influence. And just as we're talking about today's subject, Manav, we're talking about establishing your will such that you're able to transcend all those feelings, sensations, and emotions.
Well, then if you could talk for a moment about the human identity versus the divine identity, because in many cases, people feel very justified in responding emotionally to certain situations, for example, whether it's road rage or jealousy or somebody says something to you, somebody feels disrespected by something that somebody else says and they react to it. And they feel extremely justified, and part of that justification comes out of their own personal identification with the human, and they actually use that as a reason for the response. You know, hey, I'm only human. What do you expect? How did you expect me to respond? You know, you don't know what he did. You don't know what she said. You know, that sort of thing. So could you talk about the human versus the divine identity, and by associating with the human, what you can expect, and how we need to actually make the change from identifying with the human identity to that of the divine identity?
Well, as you referenced, when we talk about the human being, basically we're talking about an earthly being, someone functioning through a physical form on earth, and they go through their life experiences, they have feelings, sensations, and emotions. And when you take that definition of being a human being, an earthly type being, you're saying, since it is the feeling sensations and emotions that are really very much influencing my experience on earth, because in order to be alive, you have to have that life force or that chi energy or that electromagnetic energy flowing through your physical body. When we die, that's when we have a separation of the electromagnetic energy from the dense physical energy. So just like we said, those aspects will refer to the spirit, the energy slash matter. So the physical body, the physical structure is the more material, the dense aspect of energy, and that's what we refer to as the matter. And then the more subtle, the electromagnetic energy that's stimulating and activating to keep this physical body alive, really our breathing body that keeps this physical body alive is the energy aspect of our being. So through that energy aspect, through that more subtle aspect of our being, we have feeling sensations and emotions. But as I referenced earlier, there's a part of our being that is beyond that, meaning it's beyond energy itself, and that is our consciousness, our true self. We refer to it as our true self. And that is the aspect of our being through which, again, we're able to see. We're able to perceive, meaning that you're taking note, you're observing everything that's going on. And then if you're not emotionally attached to a situation, you're not going to be influenced by the emotions. You're not going to be driven by the senses or the urges. You're not going to have a sense of being compelled because there's no energy there. And then you can use your will to dictate and determine how it is that the energy aspect of your being is going to function or going to respond. So when we talk about identifying with the human aspect of our being versus the divine aspect of our being, then we take the position that we are the feelings, sensations, and emotions. If I'm ignorant of the other part of my being, and this is what I know, this is what I'm very much attached to, this is what I see as being the definition or the meaning of my being alive, my being able to function, to be able to act, then I'm going to believe that it is the feeling that is me. It is the sensation that is me. It's the emotion that is me. That's what dictates me. And my sense of happiness and peace is going to be relegated and dependent upon having to have a certain feeling, sensation, and emotion. So consequently, I get to a point where I follow feeling, sensations, and emotions. I indulge in some activity that's incorrect, and then I go to the ace card or go to the response that, well, I'm only human. It's only natural for me to get angry if somebody does something that I feel is a violation toward me. It's only natural for me to have a sense of grief if I feel that I've lost something that I need to have. It's only natural for me to worry if I'm not sure how something is going to occur and I think that I have to be really concerned about it. Or it's only natural for me to be sad. It's only natural for me to be upset. But if we look at those responses, we see that those responses generate chemicals in our system that bring us into a state of ill health. It even lowers our IQ. It basically is making us ill, and anything that is going to make you ill can't be natural to you. So it's somewhat a limited and poor perspective to identify with being a human being, knowing that nobody really wants to wake up in the morning to be angry or wants to wake up and go through the course of the day being worried or being fearful, because that is going to deplete your life force. That's going to stunt your ability to think and process clearly. So if it's making you ill, if it's having a negative effect, if it's degrading your ability to maintain a sense of well-being, then it can't be natural. So this is a reflection of the miseducation we've had and the lack of awareness of the whole aspect of our being. So we're really not human beings. We're divine beings functioning through a human vehicle. But that's why we have to maintain the clarity of the distinction, so that we use our divine qualities to direct and dictate the physical experiences that we're having.
You mentioned visualization earlier, and if you could talk for a moment, excuse me, about that, because when doing the MNAB meditation, and you referenced the breath as well, and being able to, you know, slow the breath down to a point where, you know, you're at a certain hertz. And once you're able to do that, is that, and when you are visualizing, is it that consciousness aspect of your being that is doing the visualizing, seeing yourself functioning in a better, more productive, or more a way that's more conducive to your health, more conducive to peace? So once you actually have slowed the breath down to a point now where the brain or the spirit is most receptive to making these changes, is it at that point that it is the consciousness that is actually doing the visualizing as you're visualizing yourself functioning in the mode that you're trying to accomplish?
Yes, what you're doing is you're manipulating your focus of consciousness. That's really, when we talk about meditation, that's the science of manipulating the focus of your consciousness, and through that you're using your will. So as you stated, as you slow your breathing down, and you become less involved, you become more distinguished from the external environment and less aware in terms of what's taking place in the external environment, and more focused on the inner aspect of your being, that sense of relaxation, sensing that calm, sensing that relaxed energy, slowing your breathing down. Then now, as I referenced with the example I gave, you have a state whereby your spirit is in a greater state of receptivity. So this would be the time whereby you can implant the particular image, you can plant the particular visual that you will for your body, for your spirit to carry out. So if I'm looking to institute a certain behavior, it's the springtime, and I'm going to get up, I'm going to start my exercise program. Then as I sit down, I'm doing my meditation, making sure I'm sitting with my back straight because I really need to get into a state of deep relaxation. And the means to do that is by controlling my breath. The means for controlling my breath is making sure I have proper posture. So I'm sitting with my back straight. And as we go through our breathing practices, we do refer to it as abdominal breathing. So as you breathe in through your nostrils, your abdomen is expanding, and as you breathe out, your abdomen is contracting. Sitting with my back straight helps to support that reality. So it puts me into a state of relaxation. I'm more aware in terms of that being calmed and relaxed, experiencing that energy. And then at that point, that's when I start to focus on the image or the vision of seeing myself exercising. I'm not going to visualize the whole process of waking up and putting on my clothes and going outside. I'm just going to get to the point where I see myself exercising. And if I'm just using it as an example, if I will to lose weight, then I would even have the meditation visualization of seeing myself with less weight, because you want to visualize the end result of what it is that you will to accomplish. The spirit will take care of the process and the specifics and the details as to how that's going to work out. You want to visualize the end result. And why it's important to do that? Because if we go through a whole scenario in terms of looking at all the details, then we'll put into our mind how we want it to happen. But that may not be how it's going to happen. And then that's going to lend toward tension within our being if it's not unfolding like we want it to be. Sometimes we're asking for help in our prayers, and the help is right there, the answer is right there, but we're not seeing it because we're visualizing it coming in a certain form and in a certain fashion. So that's why you want to just visualize the end result and then let the spirit, which is the means that holds the programs through which you're able to express an experience, let the spirit go ahead and execute how that's going to unfold.
My special guest, everyone, is Hetchimsu Heru, Shechem Meyeb Neter, chief and a priest with the Osiris Society's Washington, D.C. Nome. If you have a question and you'd like to ask it or make a comment, the call-in number, if you're listening online, is 347-324-5727. If you're listening by phone and you have a question, all you have to do is just press 1 and we can bring you on. Shechem, could we talk about just the importance of the meditation from the standpoint of able to make the peace response automatic? Again, we're talking about transcending emotions now, because I would assume, again, when you're in the midst of a situation, you know, you feel violated, somebody said something or did something that, you know, and you're connected or identifying with the human nature, and you're thinking that the response is automatic. At that moment, although there may be some benefit to, if you can, let's say if you're angry and you can just get away and just breathe for a few seconds, I'm sure that would have its benefit. But at the time that you are in the situation, it might not be the best time to try to, you know, try to visualize. You might not have time to go into, you know, your visualization or your meditation. So if we could talk about the importance of actually doing the Meyeb meditation so that you can make the peace response an automatic thing, because life is life and there are going to be challenges. For example, you might have a situation where somebody says something, you think you're doing good with it. You started your meditation, you know, and somebody says something that normally would tick you off and you get by that. Okay, you say, I'm not going to even respond to that. I'm going to just let that slide or whatever. I'm going to keep my peace. And then you get home and you get a phone call and find out that a loved one just passed away and you lose it. You know, you go into your emotions, you know. So, but if the meditations were done and the actual divine image has replaced the human self-image, that's a process that, you know, comes over time. Could you talk about the need to actually get to a point where that response is automatic, that peace response?
Well, that's why we incorporate meditation in our daily living experience, meaning that meditation is a technique, it's a skill that, as with all techniques and skills, you have to practice it, and you should practice it daily. What we're doing when we're talking about meditation, and specifically Meyeb meditation, you're practicing the response that you're going to manifest in a given situation prior to getting to the given situation. If you know that there's some particular person that when you have to interact with them, you have a sense of tension, and then that might manifest itself as anger, it might manifest itself as wanting to walk away or retract, or may manifest as being more aggressive. And you know this is going to occur because you're going to involve yourself with the person. So what we would do is we would take that situation, or refer to that scenario, and we would take that into meditation. On a nightly basis, you would visualize yourself being in that environment with that individual, and instead of manifesting what we refer to as the stress response in interacting with the person in your meditation, you would visualize yourself automatically manifesting a response whereby you're relaxed, where your breathing is in a very deep, slow, rhythmic way. You're presenting a smile. It's always a plus to present a smile in a situation unless it seems like you're antagonizing someone. It's a plus to present a smile because a smile is indicating that you're relaxed. So what you're doing is you're taking a situation where people see it as being quote-unquote stressful, and let me be clear about that. Stress is a physiological response. Stress is not an inherent state of experience or expression that one has to manifest in any particular situation, meaning that inherently no situations are stressful. The stress comes as a result of how it is that you personally respond in that particular situation. And many folks are old enough to realize and have had the experience that things that quote-unquote used to stress them out years ago or maybe even last month, it doesn't stress them out now. So that lets it be known. That proves that stress is not inherent in a particular situation. It's how you respond to the situation. So if I can transcend, if I can eliminate stress from a particular situation, and this is how I used to do it in the past, but I'll do it like that now. If I was able to do it in that situation, I can do it in any and all situations. So that's, first of all, we have to have the right idea, because that goes back to the human self-image. Because with the human self-image, you take position at certain things and certain situations, and certain people bring out the stress, or it's stressful, or they make you stressed, or they're stressing you out. And then the natural automatic response to this stress is going to be a physiological one, where you're gearing yourself up to be more physical in terms of how you handle the situation, and maybe more aggressive in terms of how you handle the situation, or you just totally retract from the situation. But that's not, that's a more animalistic response. That's what we have in reference to different aspects of our brain. That part of our brain was referred to as the reptilian portion of the brain, or the R complex, where it's prominent in reptiles. It's defending you to be able, it's helping to bring the energy so that you're able to defend yourself in a situation where there's a perceived threat. But the thing is that because we have other aspects of our brain besides just the reptilian portion of the brain, we can use high aspects of our brain to realize that this is not really a life-threatening situation. I don't have to have the physical means to respond to this situation. I can use more of the mental aspect of my being, the verbal aspect of my being, and think and speak based upon truth, think and speak based upon reasoning. And therefore, I want to allow those chemicals and physiological reactions to occur that's going to tense my muscles, that's going to put me into a greater state of aggression, and then that's going to wear down in terms of my life force, my vitality, my ability to be relaxed. So the stress is not inherent. The stress is something that we allow to come, and again, that comes from not knowing and then not applying the techniques also. But if I'm utilizing that meditation on a daily basis, then when I get to the job and the person comes and says whatever to me, or I'm in the meeting or whatever the scenario is, then I'm going to automatically have a response where I'm going to be more relaxed, I'm going to be more patient, I'm going to be more compassionate, I'm going to be more receptive, I'm just going to be at peace. And that doesn't mean that you don't handle the situation. You may even have to be more aggressive, but you're not being aggressive out of control than mad. You're just being more aggressive in terms of being assertive because that's what's required. But it's not an emotional-driven situation. You're bringing forth the energy that's needed.
Well, could you talk briefly, in addition to, you know, the peace response versus the stress response, in the example that you gave concerning, you know, you're dealing with a supervisor or a situation on the job, but a lot of people feel that it's very, very to grieve. That's something that at some point, you know, we're going to experience loss of people that we love, whether it's a parent, whether it's a child, a loved one, you know, a mate or something. And I think for a lot of people, that poses a big challenge for, you know, people who just might not have come to the point in their spiritual development where they actually understand. Because when you're talking about the mid-ab meditation and visualization, visualizing yourself being peaceful on the job, visualizing yourself, you know, giving a peace response as opposed to a stress response, I don't know if people will actually go into meditation and visualize themselves being, you know, responding peacefully if they lose a loved one, because nobody's expecting that. That's not something that people, you know, deal with on a daily basis, hopefully. So normally something like that, the loss of a loved one, catches people off guard, unless it's a situation where you have somebody in your family that's sick, you know, is ill, you know their health is declining, and you can kind of see that, you know, they, if they're not doing anything to address it from a holistic standpoint, you know, that they might be on their way out, making the transition, you can kind of prepare yourself for that. But sometimes in life, these things come upon us and we're not prepared for them. So could you talk about, even, and that happens in many, many cases, people are, you know, get a phone call and find out that a loved one died and they just weren't prepared for it. How then, when it comes to grief, can that be use this meditation, the Mid-Ab meditation, be used to help somebody that might go through that process? Because everybody that's listening to this call at some point or another will experience the loss of a loved one.
Well, the basis behind that is taking note that any stress is going to be injurious to your health. It's going to be injurious to your spirit, to your life force. So there's really no situation where there's a justification for allowing yourself to be stressed or allow yourself to function in a stressful way. And I'm clear about what it is that you're saying. Something can happen to adjust to that. We have to come to the realization of that. We have to accept that. We have to adjust to that. And depending upon a person's level of growth and development, that may take more time than with someone else. But to some people, to take the position that this is the love of my life and I can't go on without them, I don't know how I'm going to live anymore, I have no reason to live. If we look at the reality that part of life is there's going to be adversity, there's going to be challenges, and we just can't allow ourselves to give up in any given situation because we had a sudden loss or we had this experience that we didn't see coming or was unexpected. Yes, we're going to have to take time, we're going to have to adjust to it. But if you're growing up in a context, if you're growing up in a societal setting, in a perspective whereby we're constantly taught and reinforced through teachings and practices and techniques to let us know that we're peaceful by nature and that we're divine beings, then we come to the knowledge that adversity, challenges, seemingly losses is a part of life and is there to help us in our growth and development. I mean, if something occurs and there's a physical loss, then yes, you're without it. But you don't want to lose the physical, you don't want to lose the association, the loved one, and then also lose your life force and your vitality and your mind, because now there's two losses, right? And if you ask yourself the question, if I really care for this person, if they really meant that much to me, do I really take the position that they would want me to now just become non-functional or just stay in a state of grief because they're no longer here? If, you know, I think they would want us to acknowledge that they're gone physically, maintain the awareness of their spirit, maintain the awareness in terms of the positive qualities that they brought, utilize those, but continue to build my spirit, to cultivate my spirit, to be able to get beyond this point so that I can still grow and develop and be of assistance to others. So if I start off with the mindset that my nature is divine, then I realize these are going to be part of life experiences. And when I have that experience, then now I'm going to up the involvement and the application of my spiritual tools and techniques for a moment where I would really need to utilize those energies to help establish and maintain a state of balance and peace. So that's why if I'm doing my meditations on a daily basis, I'm not just looking at, you're looking at specific situations where you know you tend to respond with stress, but you're looking at the fundamental principle that responding with stress at all is a violation of my divine nature. So you're programming your spirit that anytime you have a sense of stress, and that becomes a very subtle awareness because you see that your breathing has changed. You see that there's tension in your muscles because stress, as I referenced, is a physiological response. So anytime I'm tensing, I'm gripping my hand or making a fist or I'm just even rolling my eyes or I'm sucking my teeth or I'm sighing or I'm dropping my shoulders and I'm changing my posture, that's letting me know that I'm coming to a state of stress. So with MENEV, it's an ongoing moment-to-moment meditation that you're really doing to be mindful if you're maintaining that state of vitality and balance, a state of relaxation. That's going to be the foundation for establishing and maintaining the peace in any and all situations. So you're using these meditation techniques, and specifically you're using MENEV to have an awareness of being relaxed 24/7, 365, so that even with the smallest and the slightest signals of going into a state of tension, then you have that relaxation response to kick in. And on a larger note, if there's the loss of a loved one, then that's even to your benefit, because if I'm mindful of the smaller changes that occur in my energy and my physiology and in my life force when I have a sense of stress, then for the moments where it seems that I have a greater sense of loss, I'd be better prepared to deal with that properly.
When it comes to MENEV, what is the duration of the meditation? You know, it's been said that if you can do something for 21 days, and it can actually it actually becomes a part of you, or you know. So when it comes to MENEV, is it a 21-day program, or is it done in 21-day increments? You take one particular situation that you want to change and work on that for 21 days, and then afterwards you work on another situation for 21 days. Does it work like that, or how does that work?
Well, you're referencing 21 days. In general, it's considered that if you're looking to establish or change your behavior, you want to have a continuous 21-day impression upon your spirit to make that change. But with MENEV, so that would be you're meditating 21 days straight. When you talk about MENEV, the term itself, MENEV, in the full term is MENEV M Unken Ma'at. So the MEN is referring to establishing or making stable. The EB is referring to your will. And Unken Ma'at is referring to living in truth. So there's different ways you can interpret that. By stabilizing my heart or my will, I'm able to live truth. By establishing my will, I'm able to live truth, to live in harmony with the law. So MENEV is an ongoing process. It's really an on-the-go, staying alert, staying awake meditation system that you're applying, because as I referenced, you're always looking to sense any changes in your physical response. You're using different situations where you know you tend to manifest with those emotions of fear, worry, and so forth, or you tend to manifest with that sense of stress where you can see that your breathing is changing, you're tensing and you're huffing and you're puffing and you're losing your posture. So you take that into meditation, and it's not just 21 days, it's really every day. It's an ongoing process, but you want to do a minimum of 21 days. But you take that situation or that scenario into meditation because that's serving as a practice technique in a specific situation where you're able to implant to your spirit an automatic response. It's not just the image, but you want the response, just like you automatically would curse somebody out, or you automatically would storm out the room, or you automatically would shut down. You want it to be the same way, an automatic response, that you relax your hand, you relax your breathing. Any any points of tension, any physiological tension, any muscular tension, you relax that. You maintain your posture. You maintain a positive attitude. You smile. You're speaking cordially. You're doing interacting harmoniously. You're keeping a clear mind. You're allowing for those thoughts to flow. Because when I'm manifesting stress, when I'm in a state of stress, I'm not having the free flow of thoughts. I'm not open and receptive to insight, to getting guidance and direction from the inner aspects of my being. So you would want to do it daily. That can definitely include 21 days. But it's a process once you really establish your mental health that you're using day to day, at the job, on the bus, the subway, at home. You're in that point all the time because just like, and somewhat repeating myself, you automatically will sigh, you automatically will be frustrated. You always want to automatically have a positive attitude, automatically go into a state of relaxation, automatically check your breathing. So it's an ongoing process when you're talking about mental health. You're working to establish your will to declare and dictate how you're going to respond to the situation, not ever allowing the feeling, sensation, and emotion, the animal aspect of your being, to dictate how you're going to respond in any given situation.
Could you talk, Shechem, about the meditation script and the role that that plays in MNEB, if it is a role in MNEB, and the importance of actually writing down what it is that, you know, the desired changes that you wish to make? Because in some meditation systems, like, for example, I know TM, they just Transcendental Meditation, they just give you a mantra and tell you to repeat that with no meditation script, no, you know, just repeat the mantra and that's it. Could you talk about the importance of actually getting the best out of your meditation by actually using a meditation script?
Well, when we talk about the meditation script in general, because sometimes you have different meditation systems apply a script in different ways, but generically when we talk about a meditation script, first, there's really four components to it. And first, you identify the situation or the scenario that you're dealing with. So I made reference to the job, continuing with that as an example. If there's a particular person at the job and I have to interact with them, they're approaching me, I have to be in a meeting with them, I have a sense of tension. I really find myself tightening my muscles, I'm sighing, I'm, you know, thinking I don't want to deal with this, so I really don't want to be in a situation. That's the tension. That's the expression of the tension I'm experiencing. But again, we got to be clear, the tension is a physiological manifestation because your breathing becomes arrhythmic. You're not breathing deep, slow, rhythmically, abdominal breathing. You're sighing, your posture is changed, you're moving from side to side, you're tilting your head, you're rolling your eyes, you're making a fist. There's different expressions of that tension that people have. So that's going to be a scenario. That's what you're noting as, this is a situation in which I experience tension that I know I need to relax. So you take note of that scenario. You want to pretty much be detailed in your writing of that scenario. You don't want it to be a whole page. You just want it to be a number of lines, but you want to take note of the physiological response that you have in that situation. This is what we refer to as the trigger, meaning that this is what's initiating you going into a state of tension. So when they come toward me, I say, oh, my God. So that just, oh, my, is the beginning of that response. And then my posture shifts in the chair when they're coming toward me. Then I sigh and I tilt my head. So you want to make note of those physiological changes that's occurring, because as you go through your meditation, you're going to realize that you see yourself, as soon as that signal, as soon as that change in the breathing, that change in posture occurs, that's when I'm going to now start to visualize myself functioning in a more balanced and vital fashion. Sort of the scenario, you're looking at the violation. Now, there's another component to this that when we talk about being in violation, generically there's 11 laws that we say within the Kemetic tradition that we live by, 11 laws indicating how it is we need to properly manage our spirit. So it's, the laws are like one or two sentences long, and you can take note of each law so you can see that if the person is now coming toward me and they're going to tell me this, and it's like, you know, I hate this person, I really don't want to ever have to deal with them, So I would take position that this person is against me. This person is in opposition to me. And that would be a violation of one of the laws. So we would take note at step two that this is the law that's being violated. But I'd also be taking note that the law is not really, they're coming to me is not really a violation of the law. They're coming to me is an opportunity for me to realize that there's a weakness and imbalance within my spirit, and I'm appreciative that this person is in my life because they provide to me an opportunity to grow and develop. So if it helps you to become a better, stronger, more righteous person, then it's really not against you. And then the third aspect, you would visualize yourself functioning correctly in that situation. Excuse me. So meaning that when they come to you, you're not going to see yourself being angry or see yourself being upset or see yourself being tense. You're going to do just the opposite. See yourself sitting up straight. You're going to visualize yourself being relaxed. All your muscles are going to be relaxed. Your breathing is going to be a deep abdominal breathing. You're going to be speaking to them in a cordial fashion. You're going to be very respectful. You're going to be smiling. And then the fourth aspect is you want to see yourself receiving a blessing, meaning that it's not like you're doing this and you're going to get spiritually paid because you did the right thing. It's that you're doing this, and by maintaining your state of peace, by maintaining a state of righteousness, you're freeing up that energy that you would have had tied up in terms of being tense and incorrect behavior. That energy is freed up to help move you toward accomplishing other goals that you have in life, or just cultivating that principle of being able to be at peace and relax in a situation of challenge. That may help you in terms of being more disciplined in terms of your exercise program that we referenced earlier. And now your blessing can be that you see yourself losing weight, mm-hmm. All right, or you see yourself having lost the weight. And I know it may not seem like a direct connection, but when you get to the state of being able to be at peace and vital and balanced and in all situations, then you're basically guaranteeing success in accomplishing the right goals that you have. So you want to see that blessing occurring as a result of you living in harmony with the divine laws. You're tapping into the knowledge and power that you need to be successful in other areas of your life. So you have the scenario, which is a trigger situation. You have the law that you're looking at, that you may be in violation of, and you're writing a script such that you're giving thanks for this moment because it's going to help you to correct the function according to that law. You have the visualization where now you're seeing yourself functioning as such, and you have the blessing that you're going to receive as a result by living in harmony with the law. But specifically in terms, but that's generically in terms of meditation script, specifically with Manav, an example that you would give, because it doesn't, with Manav, it's not necessarily that a law that you've, well, it eventually you can trace it to a law, but let's say that you have a situation whereby you're saying you love your child, but yet you become very angry and aggressive and frustrated when they do something and making mistakes, and you're yelling at them and you're screaming at them, and you may even, you know, hit them aggressively. Well, you can't really love someone and project that energy to them, right? So that would be the situation, the scenario that you would have to take note of. And the reason you're doing that, just if we turn the tables and we look at ourselves, you can't have somebody physically abusing you, right, mentally, emotionally abusing you. That's not an expression of love. They may have good intentions, but the energy for them to function correctly is not in play. So I can't declare that I'm loving someone and still allow myself to function in that situation. So then I would invoke a reasoning process. That's part of the Manav system. You're using the meditation, but you're also reasoning. So the reasoning would be, as I just referenced, I can't truly say that I love this person or truly express love if I'm being physically aggressive, mentally, physically abusive to them. And then your reasoning says, so it's really not them, and especially as a child. A child is just behaving as a child. They haven't gotten to that point of reasoning in terms of their growth and development yet. They haven't got to the point of really being able to discern right and wrong in any and all situations. So I can't expect them to be accountable. So you got to look and ask the question and just not fault yourself and just say you're a bad person. You got to say, well, was I really ready to have a child? Was I ever taught how to properly parent? And is it something maybe in terms of when I was conceiving a child, maybe I had been doing drugs, so I may have brought some poor genetics to the child, right? Is it a situation whereby I just never had, I'm angry myself about other things, and I'm projecting that onto the child. So you're reasoning what it is that may be the background of your behavior, and then through that reasoning process, you're taking into account that you need to see yourself functioning correct in that situation, and also applying the meditations to transcend the anger. Because we're just looking at modifying our behavior, but we have to realize we got to transcend that anger, we got to transcend that tension. Or we can't dog ourselves or beat ourselves down. We have to get some information and guidance and direction as to how to properly parent, or realize that there's a physiological imbalance and maybe there's something happening with my health that I need to change. So you're using that reasoning skill, that technique, to get a better understanding of what's the root of the problem and then apply corrective measures.
So all of these experiences in life, for example, I'm thinking of the law of Osir, which I believe states that nothing and no one can be against me. All experiences come to me for me to exercise with or to reclaim my peace so that I can obtain wisdom and spiritual power, if I quoted that correctly. So then all of these experiences, whether the example you gave of a child, whether it's a supervisor, whether it's a loss, whatever, all of these things actually hold up a mirror to us to actually show us where we are so that we can, in turn, exercise peace and acquire wisdom and spiritual power. Would that be a correct statement?
That would be correct. And on a broader picture, just looking at the basic, the essence as to why we're here, is we sit as a supreme being. The God has created the world to serve as the environment in which to express and experience. But it's going to express and experience in its divine nature, which is peace. That's its nature of being. So in order to have an experience, God has to be present, the supreme being has to be present in the world. And it's through this human form that God is able to have full access knowledge to the knowledge of its being, its will, and its power in order to express an experience. So all the experiences that we have are there to help us to grow and develop spiritually. Life has conspired for us to come into the realization of our divine nature. That's why when we're challenged and when we have adversity, we don't want to curse the moment. We don't want to pray that we never have to go through this again. We want to embrace the moment as an opportunity to change, to generate the knowledge and the power to be successful, to be at peace, and be thankful that the divine aspect of life has not forgotten about us. That's part of the covenant that God needs us in order to come into the world, and we need the knowledge and power of God in order to be successful. So life is always moving to assist us in our growth and development. We have to shift that identity away from the human part of our being towards the divine part of our being and appreciate the experiences and the challenges that we have as the opportunity to grow and develop.
You know, Shechem, this is an awesome, awesome interview, and I want to let everybody know about the workshop, the MINAB workshop that's coming up. Could you share the dates and the times of that workshop and the location?
Yes, the workshop is going to be this Saturday in Washington, D.C., at the Simbeb Wellness Complex, that's 6224 3rd Street, Northwest, D.C., 20011, and that's going to be at 5 p.m. It's basically going to be from 5 to 7 p.m., and there's a $7 donation for that workshop. So a lot of what we've talked about today, we'll go over in that workshop. We'll literally do the meditation itself, go in more detail specifically with the MINAB practice. So we invite everyone to join us then.
Also, no children, please. We're going to be meditating, so definitely you want quiet. You don't want, children that are restless and, possibly disrupting the workshop. Shechem, also get there early. You know, I encourage everybody to get out there, but get there early. You want to make sure, because I'm sure it's going to be crowded, so you want to make sure that you're able to, you know, get in and get a seat. So get there early. In the last moment, how does the Meneb differ from the Waeb? I know that Shechem and Shechem, Ra'u Nefa Amen, wrote a book, Waeb, How to Enhance and Heal Your Brain Through Kemetic Meditation. How does Meneb differ from Waeb?
Okay, well, we don't want to assume that everybody is aware of what Waeb really means.
Okay.
But that's UA, I assume that's UA and then AB, that's Waeb. And that basically is referring to meditation, or the Y is referring to the thought, the Ab is referring to your will. So when you're talking about Waeb, you're doing a meditation where you're focusing on a particular goal, a particular objective. That focus becomes so intense that it's basically going to siphon out anything else to deny you from accomplishing what it is that you will to do. So you're holding on to a thought, you're fixing attention on a particular thought. When you talk about the Meneb, again, you're going to be using meditation to be mindful of your being peaceful and relaxed in any and all situations. And then you're going to be using the process of reasoning to look at why it is that you're functioning in a particular way, and using that basis of reasoning through meditation to establish the new behavior that you will to put in place. So with the Meneb, again, it's helping you moment to moment to be very mindful that you're going to establish how it is you're going to act in any and all situations, and the basis of that is going to be peace itself, so that you're taking note of your breathing, you're taking note of your posture, you're taking note of your being physically relaxed. And that's really important because, as I mentioned, stress comes as a physical manifestation. So we think about using meditation to relax ourselves, and that's definitely an important part of meditation. But you're not going to use really mental mechanisms as your first mode of corrective measures in terms of relaxation. You're going to use physiological means in terms of relaxation, and that's something that we really have to learn. So through adjusting my breathing, by relaxing any points of tension, I'm disarming that energy of an emotion that's putting me into a state of stress. So there is a distinction in terms of just being focused on a particular goal, but what we talk about with the YF, focusing on a thought, and then we're talking about Meneb, we're talking about establishing as your standard pattern of functioning in any situations, being relaxed and at peace.
Shechem, are there any particular times of the month or phases of the moon that are better for embarking upon a meditation program? We know that when it comes to, you know, just the cycles, the solstice and the equinoxes, that the winter solstice is the most opportune time to actually start planting seeds. Are there, during the course of any given month, is there a time that's more conducive to that than others, like, for example, the new moon or the full moon? Or can you just start it at whenever, you know, you come across the information and you're ready to start making those changes?
The most receptive time of the month is during the full moon. And you often have that energy manifesting in the cycle of seven. So if you take the 3 days before the full moon, the 3 days after the full moon itself, those 7 days is when your spirit is really most receptive to being impressed on a monthly basis as to a particular seed or particular pattern of behavior that you're willing to establish. And in general, if you're doing it within a cycle and you're looking at it from the monthly basis, on a lunar cycle, you want to start at the new moon because you're generating a new cycle. So you start your meditations in the new moon at the beginning of the lunar cycle, at the time of the new moon, doing it in the evening time before you go to sleep, carrying it through that 21-day period as you referenced. So if we go basically 14 days from the new moon, counting forward, then we're going to get to the full moon. So I'm going to take it through those 14 days, and then 7 days after that, that's helping to really fix that pattern of behavior or that thought into my spirit. So we would start at the new moon, carry that through at least 21 days, really want to carry through the whole cycle. And then the next new moon or the next lunar cycle, you may be starting with another meditation. But the full moon is the time of the lunar cycle when you're most receptive.
And the minute of meditation, is that to be done in the morning or in the evening?
Generically, the evening is the time to do your meditation and take that really into your sleep. But as you're using the MENAB system, you're doing the meditations to establish how you're going to respond in a particular situation. But as I said, MENAB is like a meditation on your feet as you're on the go. You're establishing the awareness of being relaxed and at peace in any and all situations. So as you go through your day, you're not really going to be taking time out to sit down with somebody. That person's coming to your desk, as I referenced before. You're not going to tell them, give me 5 minutes, I need to meditate before I talk to you. As they walk toward you, you're going to have a sense of awareness because that MENAB is very much tied in terms of being mindful of your energies. So you can have a sense of awareness that I'm saying, oh, here they come. That's why I said it was important in writing your script to write down what we call those triggers. So you look up and you see them coming and you say, oh, my God, or, oh, Lord, or here they come. So as soon as you hear that oh or the here, then now that's your meditation, that's your MENAB meditation system kicking in because that's your trigger. And you're going to say, okay, they're coming. Let me be relaxed. Let me check, make sure there's no tension. Check my breathing, go into abdominal breathing. Let me have this proper vision that I've been meditating on. And really, once you've done it enough, it's going to happen automatically because people often, they'll use the technique and then they'll realize after they finish the interaction with the person that they didn't get mad, that they were cautious. Sometimes they may even get mad that they didn't get mad because it's like, well, they got over on. So it becomes automatic. So as you cultivate MENAB, it's literally throughout the day, you have that mindfulness so that you maintain that state of relaxation and no stress.
Everybody, my special guest is Shechem Meab Neter Hekshemsu Heru. I encourage everybody to get out to the workshop if you're in Washington, D.C. or Maryland, Virginia. Take it there. That's this Saturday at the Sinbeb Wellness Complex. That's at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. And there's a $7 donation for that. Did you say the zip there was 20011, Shechem?
Correct.
Okay. And can they get more information at 202-723-5566?
Correct.
Yes. Okay. Everybody, make sure that you make it out to this awesome, awesome workshop that's going to take place. Again, get there early, okay, to make sure that you, you know, make sure that you're there and you can get in because you don't want to get to the point where you get there and you realize that you just run being a little late and the next thing you know that the place is full. So you want to make sure that you actually get there and you know, get a chance to get this information so that you can apply it to your life. Any parting words, Shechem? I know the workshop is Saturday, and they'll get more information when they get there, but is there anything else that you'd like to share on the MENAB before we close the show today?
Now, there's also a text that Ron F. Amen has written, and that we've ordered that to get that from New York. Willfully it'll be in. If not, by the time of the workshop, we will get it in. And the name of that is MENAB, Comedic Behavioral Transcendence Meditation. So that's the MENAB book itself. And that'll be available for sale. And also, just a point of note, we are having a program, I've just remembered this, on tomorrow. Brother Samu Parah, who's a Bazi counselor, and that's dealing with generically a Chinese astrology system to help you see the energy surrounding your person and the periods during the course of the years and the year itself, the optimal time for whether you should be starting projects or working on your education or what type of activities you should involve yourself with based upon your personal energies and the energy that's available. He's going to be in D.C. really on tomorrow, Friday, during consultations. And he's also going to be doing a workshop. I don't have all the details on that, but someone can still call us at 202-723-5566 to make an appointment with Samu Parah and attend the workshop on the Bazi.
Everybody, make sure that you attend this workshop. Speaking of Brother Samu Parah, he's a regular on Health, Wealth, and Divine. Comes on every third Tuesday the month, and I want you to go back and check the archives out. We've gotten all kinds of shows with Brother Sanu Parral on parenting, on success, on relationships, on you name it. It's Bozzy Insights, you know, projections for 2016. I mean, you definitely want to check out those shows. Also, this show is going to be archived within 30 minutes after the completion. So if you're listening and you know that there's somebody else that needs to hear this information, you can share the link with them and they can actually hear the show. The show is full, the archives are full of shows with guests like Hexham Suhuru, Shekameh Abneter, Brother Orwell Hehi Meturine Comet, Shekameta Uneta, I mean, Shekham Sa'anktaku Nenebu. I mean, the shows are just full of people from the Osarset, priests and priestesses from the Osarset Society that share the ancient comedic wisdom with us. And so I encourage you to go back and listen to the archives. Again, that workshop on the Meneb is going to be this Saturday, starting at 5 p.m. at the Simbeb Wellness Complex, and that's at 6224 3rd Street Northwest. The zip code is 20011. There will be a $7 donation for the workshop. And if you'd like more information, please call 202-723-5566. Again, that's 202-723-5566. Don't forget to get there early. Shekham, again, great interview. I can't wait to go back and listen to it. A lot of information was shared. And I'm sure you've given a perfect overview of the Meneb system and why that if we utilize it, that it can be beneficial to us. I thank you again, my brother, for being such an awesome guest. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Brother Juan, for having me on again.
Absolutely. Everybody, that was or is Hexham Suhuru, Shekameh Abneter. Go back and check the archives that we've done shows with him. We just did a show recently with him. Matter of fact, it was last week on the spring equinox. If you missed that show, awesome. You need to go back and check out the archives. Also, other shows with him. Just all you have to do is just scroll down the archives and you'll see shows that I'm sure that you'll be able to benefit from. Everyone, I want to say thank you so much for your time. Enjoy your day. Make it to the workshop that's this Saturday, again, at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. That's the Simbeb Wellness Complex. It's Meneb Meditation Transforming, or shall I say, Transcending Your Emotions Now. So don't miss the workshop. Until the next time, my name is Jawanza. Thank you so much for your time. Until the next time, Etipu.